Internal motivation is something that you create. It's their purpose, right? It's that burning desire. It's when they put their feet on the floor every morning, what's their purpose? You know, Rick Warren wrote the great book, Purpose Driven Life. It's kind of purpose driven career. What's the purpose of everybody? Because success is a choice. Survival is our instinct.
Success, relevance, survival. The pandemic has changed everything about management in today's business world. For the automotive industry and similar businesses that rely on in-person sales, you're going to need new tools if you're going to succeed. And fortunately, Tim Kintz is sharing his. In his new book, Fearless, Tim shows you how to be a dynamic leader and become unbreakable. He wants you to learn how to innovate throughout challenges, soar above the competition, and keep your team one step ahead in certain and uncertain times. This follow-up to his Amazon bestseller, Frictionless, is a resource for learning how to manage with facts, not feelings, ensuring that profit and success are always the end result. Whether you are a new leader or a seasoned professional, this book will be your constant companion for navigating the world of management today. Hey, listeners, my name is Drew Applebaum, and I'm excited to be here today with Tim Kintz, author of Fearless, Leading and Managing Unbreakable Teams. Tim, thank you for joining. Welcome to the Author Hour podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Now, we know you're a professional here on the podcast, but can you kick this off by reminding us a bit about your professional background?
Yeah, I've had the Kintz Group for about 7 years now, but prior to that, I spent 13 years training and about 11 years in car dealerships, everything from washing them all the way through to being a general manager of a dealer group. And it was the only real job I ever had, or I don't know if you even call being in the car business a real job, but that's kind of my background. I got into it accidentally. We always say it's like Denny's. You never plan on getting in the car business. You just end up there at 2 a.m. like Denny's or IHOP. Sure. It's the same principle.
Now, this is your second book. Why did you feel the need to publish again?
So the first book, Frictionless, was my first book that I put out because I understood the need that salespeople had to learn how to close and negotiate more effectively, because there is very little training, very little good training that's out there. And I realized that the impact I could make immediately by helping salespeople and managers be better at closing and negotiating. But then the pandemic hit, and I, like so many other people, spent hours on Zoom calls and helping managers and dealers figure out how do we get through this? How do we lead our teams through this? And I realized this book that I've been wanting to write for so long, this manager's tactical guide, this daily, basically Bible on what I need to do every day and how to lead a team and a business, it was time. And I put that together during the pandemic because the need was so great and in our face.
So now was the time to write the book because you recognized that hole that was happening in all of these dealerships and you knew you had, you know, the answer, so to say, in your head?
Absolutely. It wasn't even just in my head that we needed to do it or that I thought it. It was the conversations I was having daily with managers and dealerships on everything from, we have no salespeople because they can't come to work because we're shut down and right, it's only us as managers running this place, to we need to learn how to build a digital retailing process and or department. Mm-hmm. And I had to deal with it every day to help these guys through it. And it's amazing when you embrace the challenge, when you attack these processes fearlessly, and realize that, man, this is what the end result's going to look like, and let's kick ass and make it happen. It's amazing the change and evolution that can happen.
Now, how is this book different than other leadership books?
I think there's a lot of great leadership books out there written by really smart people. And I'll be the first one to say that I may not be a really smart person when it comes to book sense. I went to college for 4 years and don't have enough credits to get a 2-year degree. Not proud of that. Just I did stay eligible to play baseball for 4 years. That was my goal. But sure. I had real world training, right? School gives you knowledge so you can be good at taking tests. Life gives you tests so you can gain knowledge. And I think the knowledge is what I've learned over my 23 plus years training and in the car business. And it's a day-to-day tactical book. I always say leadership's overrated, and everybody looks at me like I'm crazy. And I don't really mean leadership's overrated, but the word is overused because there's so many really good books out there that are, you know, a dozen rules to effective leadership and how I let – man, it's – those are great, and here's all the characteristics. But how do I actually pull it off every single day? Mm-hmm. Okay, when I come in, I understand character and vision and all these are important. But when I walk in and I've got 50 emails I have to respond to immediately, I got 2 heat case customers that are standing there that want to talk to me. I have to order cars. I have to work car deals and sell cars. I got 2 salespeople called in sick. I got 1 there and they're hungover. And I'm supposed to focus on 21 irrefutable laws of a leader. That's the difference between mine and theirs. This is a tactical guide that they can follow to get through the day because everything isn't perfect. Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Right.
And you're going to get punched in the face as a leader.
You have all of this experience in your head. You know the book you want to write. But while you were writing it, did you come across any learnings or major breakthroughs? Maybe if you did some research, maybe it was while creating some of the resources.
Yeah, I think especially as we get into the coaching and the one-on-ones, you know, that's always a big resistance point from managers. They'll give me a million excuses on why we shouldn't sit down with our salespeople and do one-on-ones every day. That's fine. But the reality is most of us were never trained how to do an effective one-on-one. One-on-ones and sitting down with your people every day can be awkward if you do not have a plan, if you do not know what to talk about every day, if we're not making it about them, their vision, their goals, about their statistics and their probabilities. If we're not helping them every day, you know, when you get done doing one-on-ones with people and sitting down with your people, the question is, are they better at the end of that 5 or 10 or 20 minute one-on-one than they were at the beginning? And if you can't say yes, then you just wasted 5 or 10 or 15, 20 minutes of their life. And that's really, as you work through it, is making sure that it's a step-by-step on how to do it and what to do versus just saying, you should be meeting with your people every day. Yeah, well, too many other books should all over their people. This is the how-to. This will give them a step-by-step on getting the most out of their team.
Now, this is the how-to for who? Who is this book for? Is it for owners, managers, and GMs, or can sales staff get something out of this book as well? And is this, would you say, only applicable to the auto industry, or could any sort of sales org pick up and get tips and tricks from this book as well?
So as far as who's it for, all the above. Anybody that wants to be a leader. And being a leader isn't necessarily the title. It's, you could be a salesperson, and that's lateral leadership, right? Locker room leadership. So there's lessons for every position. It's obviously anybody that's in a management position that is managing, leading, coaching a team that are either salespeople or they have targets, medical supply companies, medical device companies, insurance companies, pharmaceutical sales, insurance sales, investment sales, car sales, RV sales. It's if your people have targets, if they have goals, if they're selling anything, you need this book because it is, as you guys already know, it's like herding cats. when you're dealing with salespeople, because the highs are higher with a salesperson. So when things are going good, man, they're rocking, having fun. Problem is the lows are lower. And when things aren't going good, man, that's when they need that pickup. And that's the hardest time, is when things are not going good. So anybody that's managing people that have agenda or have targets to hit, this book's for them.
Now, I love the story early on in the book where you really learned about people and building a team. And it was the experience you had, as you mentioned before, in college baseball. Can you talk about that experience and how it got you started thinking about effective teams?
Yeah, you know, I think when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you don't really know the lessons you're learning until, you know, years later. I always say the older you get, the smarter your parents were. Well, it's the same thing with the lessons I learned. I was blessed to be able to play baseball in college and play out in Arizona. And I literally, that story in there is my first team out there. We had CAC and Cove, and they couldn't have been different. They couldn't have been more different as far as their methods. You know, one was a coach, one was progressive, and man, he cared about us to the point that I talked to him regularly. And to this day, 30 plus years later, the other one, man, he was a boss. He wanted to win. They both loved the game. They both loved baseball. They both knew baseball. They didn't know how to get the most out of their players. And I think that happens in the dealerships, that sometimes we manage our department. We want to win, but we forget that if you want your department to succeed, you got to stop managing the department and start managing the people within the department. And it's really the same lesson that I learned out in Arizona. And CAC was, he knew how to get the most out of each one of the players. He knew what made each one of us tick. He knew what motivated each one. And he used that in a good way. And sometimes, look, he had to rattle our cage every now and then and get serious. And sometimes, you know, he knew when to pat us on the back. But, I think the big lesson I learned, though, was how to bounce back from failure. You know, I remember CAC telling us that he didn't care how we handled success. He said, anybody can handle success. Everybody loves scoring a touchdown. That's easy. He said he cared about how you bounce back from failure, right? You go 12 for 20, you're hitting 600, you're King Kong, you're a hero. What about when you go 0 for 20? How do you handle it then? And that's true success. And look, that doesn't just happen because of the player has great character, the player is a unicorn. That happens because that player's got a great coach that can lead and mentor him. And he was so good at picking you up when you were down and helping you get going again. You know, I remember he always said it takes 100 swings to get into a slump as a hitter, and it takes 1,000 good swings to get out of a slump. So 100 bad swings, and all of a sudden you're in a slump and nothing goes right. So you're going to have to do 1,000 good swings to get out of that slump. But without having a great coach and mentor to walk you through that and let you see what you need to get better at, then you'll never hit your potential as a player or as a salesperson.
Now, when you're building a team, you obviously have to bring people onto the team. So I'd love to talk about hiring for a moment. Is there a difference between hiring and training for a sales position and team versus other industries?
Yeah. The person and the personality is definitely different, right? It's obviously more of a retail versus a detail position when you're in sales. And I think as managers, we have to be careful because so often we'll hire somebody because we need to fill that position. So we end up selecting them in the interview instead of rejecting them. We're looking at all the reasons why we need a warm body instead of, is this the right person? You know, it's are you better off being short-staffed or wrong-staffed? You know, it's funny whenever I ask people that question, and managers, now it's, I'm better off being short-staffed. Yeah, you say that until Saturday when you got 20 customers and 8 salespeople. And then on Monday, you hire warm bodies that can fog a mirror, and you're thinking, there's no way I'd ever buy a car from this guy. you ask them first thing, when can you start? So when you're hiring, this isn't just punching a clock. This is, I think the number one question I want to know, other than the obvious, their background checks, all that, is I'm going to ask them, when was the last time you were in a competitive situation? Tell me the last time you had to compete for something. That's what when I'm looking for a salesperson, I want them to be competitive. There's a scoreboard for a reason, because you're supposed to win. So if they can't tell me the last time they were in a competitive situation, chances are they're going to be, they're living in the world of complacency versus the world of competition. And I don't need that for a salesperson.
Continuing on with hiring, what is with hiring managers today? What's the issue? Is it hiring because of tenure? Is that a problem? Or is it hiring because the highest seller, you think you need to promote them? And is that a problem? Talk about hiring and bringing in management.
Well, I think that's kind of a double-edged. I mean, there's two problems, right? Going through the pandemic, we had attrition. We had people fall off. We lost some good people. Hell, we lost some good people in 2008 when we had the recession. We lost a lot of good people, good managers, good leaders. And then we had some people get promoted because they were good salespeople. But that didn't necessarily mean they were good managers. I think sometimes we think because you're a good player, you're going to be a good manager. Okay, that doesn't always happen. And we're kind of repeating that at the pandemic, that if you stick around, and it's like Survivor, outwit, outlast, outplay, and don't get voted off the island. Well, that's kind of how it is so often in the dealerships. If you outwit, outplay, outlast, don't get voted off, eventually you'll be a manager. Well, just because you're a great player doesn't mean you're a great manager. There's very few great players that made great managers in sports. There was a lot of them that tried it, the Magic Johnsons, Michael Jordans, Gretzky. Yeah, it didn't work out for most of the great players. Now, there were some good ones that made good coaches and good managers. But just because you're a great player doesn't mean you're going to be a great manager. And if you're selling me 25 cars a month, why the hell do I want to take a 25-car salesperson off the floor? Who am I going to replace them with? 3 8-car salespeople? So sometimes it's because we don't make sales the best job in the dealership, and it's perceived that manager is. And it's not. If you're a high-achieving salesperson, I don't want another job. And it's creating, cultivating. I may promote somebody, but it needs to be the right person.
Now, a lot of your book is about building internal motivation. Can you define that for us?
Internal motivation is something that you create. It's their purpose, right? It's that burning desire. It's when they put their feet on the floor every morning. What's their purpose? You know, Rick Warren wrote the great book, Purpose Driven Life. It's kind of purpose driven career. What's the purpose of everybody? Because success is a choice. Survival is our instinct, right? When you wake up every morning, you don't wake up instinctually saying, I'm going to be successful. We wake up, survival. I need to eat, drink, go to the bathroom. That's survival. We have to consciously make that choice to succeed. And as managers, we have to create that internal motivation in our people and help them have their long-term vision. What do they want to achieve in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? What does their life look like in the perfect world if they could paint it? And it's not easy to do, but the other option is just letting people exist. I mean, look around you. It's amazing when you look around and how many people are just existing versus actually succeeding. You know, go to a class reunion and look around and think, wow, man, that guy had so many dreams. Look at him now. And I think so often we spend our first 18 to 20 years of our lives dreaming big. Man, we're shooting for the stars, and worst case scenario, we're hitting the moon. And then all of a sudden we get out of high school or out of college, and then we just start surviving. we wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and it's like time to make the donuts. And then we come home at six at night, drink a six pack of beer, watch Jerry Springer. Pretty soon some of us are on Jerry Springer and we just spend the next 60 years of our life existing. I mean, it's insane how many people they dream and succeed and they want, they have such big hopes their first 20 years and the next 60 years existing. Man, you got to break that. And with salespeople, we got to help them have that passion. We got to give them that drive. And if they were going to do it, they'd already done it. That's my job as a manager and as a leader. And it's sitting down with them and getting to know your people. It's just not managing tasks. You're managing people.
Now, you say to really become a great manager, a great general manager, you do need that internal motivation, sure. But as you mentioned, you need to be a great leader and you have to have those leadership qualities. So you break down being a great leader into four quadrants. Can you list those quadrants and maybe go into a bit more detail of what each one represents?
Yeah, I really, kind of like I talked about earlier, was leadership's overrated. Okay. Yeah, it's overused. I really break leadership down into four areas, and I call it the leadership quadrant. You lead, manage, train, and coach. And I think all four of those areas are critical, and all four of those areas are learned, and you have to keep getting better at them. And because there's some of us that are good at leading, right? You lead people. If you're not a good leader, people aren't going to follow you. It doesn't matter what you want to do. But I also think you need to be able to manage, and you manage things. You manage your inventory. You manage statistics. You manage their tendencies and probabilities. You manage your day. If you can't manage your day, how can you expect your people to manage their day? Right. And then you have to be able to train for knowledge. Right. I can't just get knowledge. As a salesperson, you have to train me. You have to give me knowledge. It's a transfer of knowledge. And you coach to develop skills. And that's where you roll up your sleeves. So I believe all of them are critical because some of us are great leaders, but we don't manage the details well. And things just become a mess. And we end up with heat. Because we procrastinate, we don't know the statistics or probabilities, so we can't lead our people in any real direction. And then there's some of us that are good with detail, not good with retail. We're good with managing things, but we're not good with people. Well, you can manage things all you want, but if your people aren't going to follow you, it doesn't matter. So those go together, and it's the same with training and coaching. Okay, well, you can train and give knowledge all you want. I have an online training platform. You're going to gain knowledge. Sure, I can watch a Zoom call and get knowledge, but knowledge isn't power. Knowledge is dangerous, man. Knowledge without the skill is not any good. Okay, anybody tells me that you're going to learn on Zoom as good as you will in person, then I want you, the next time you have surgery, I want to make sure that you have surgery by a doctor that learned 100% on Zoom on how to do that surgery on you. Because the hands-on, it's the coaching, it's the rolling your sleeves up with your people and helping them develop the skills part that's missing so much. So it's train and give them knowledge, but coaching is developing the skills with them. And when all four of those are working good, that's when you become a great leader. That's when people will follow you through a brick wall versus you being the brick wall. Because that's all we are if we're not giving them the knowledge and helping them develop the skills. If you're not inspiring them, leading them, giving them a vision to shoot for, then, you know, it's like I always say, if you shoot at nothing, you'll hit nothing with amazing accuracy. And I'm tired of my people shooting for nothing. I want to give them a vision. And then we have to break it down into manageable stats, manageable numbers and targets and benchmarks and start measuring it as we're moving forward so we can celebrate successes and we can make adjustments as needed based on our statistics and tendencies and probabilities.
Are there other rules in your experience that great leaders tend to live by and follow?
There is a ton of them. And, you know, I touch on a lot of them in the book. I could probably do Fearless Part 2 and put more in there. I think it really starts with having vision, being able to set actionable, attainable goals, and be able to execute an effective plan. I think that really is where it all starts. Because when you start doing that, it's a ripple effect. Now everybody, if I can communicate that to my people, now they know how they fit in. And their vision matters. And we can create that internal and external motivation by having goals. I think great leaders, when we aren't hitting our goals, when things aren't going great, I think great leaders will take the bullet and say, it's my fault. I didn't get my team prepared. My plan wasn't good enough, but I'm going to make it better. And when things go really good, I think the great leaders say, look, my job was easy. These guys we got here, man, they went out and made it happen. So when things go good, great leaders give credit to their team. And when things go bad, great leaders, they'll take that bullet. It's my fault. It wasn't my team. Even when it was the team's fault at times, they'll still take that bullet and never, never publicly bash on their teams. And it's kind of a sacrifice. Right, if you're going to be a great leader, you got to be willing to sacrifice and realize it's not about you, it's about your people. Put your ego in your pocket, and just you want to grow your store, grow each individual. That's when you start growing your company.
Now, you do bring up a few people you look up to in your book. You mentioned your college baseball coach, and you also talk about Colin Sewell. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He makes a lot of appearances in the book in the beginning and at the end. Can you talk to us about Colin and what you see in him and maybe what his secret is, his secret to success?
You know, Colin and me have been friends for years. And in fact, I'm heading out there next week to do training in his dealership. And, you know, Colin understands the value of training, giving back, that it's about his people, sacrifice. Colin, I've probably learned more from Colin than he'd ever learned from me, just because I see that how he puts his people first and how they are the most important to him. And everything he does is about that. You know, he has vision unlike anybody I've seen. He saw a blank piece of dirt that was in the middle of nowhere, saw that as the future of Sewell Ford. And I saw it as a piece of desert that, what are you going to do all the way out here? And he created the new Sewell Ford out in Odessa. And it's an unbelievable, it's a Taj Mahal. And his whole goal, his whole vision is giving back to the community. You go out there and you're going to see Sewell Ford on the back of every kid's soccer jerseys. When there's a kid that can't afford cleats and gloves, then Sewell he's going to make sure they have cleats and gloves. He gives scholarships to high school kids and gives away Mustangs. And his sacrifice and how much he cares about his people and he puts them first, that's why he's been so successful. One thing he does say, though, is he always says that, you know, his people say it about him, but this is his mindset, that we'll take you how you are, but we love you too much to let you stay that way. And if you think about that and that being his mindset, it's all growth. It's all he wants to grow his people and his store. And we'll take you how you are, but we love you too much to stay that way. That philosophy is, to me, amazing.
Also in your book, towards the back end, you have really amazing motivational tools. You have retention programs. You have contests, sales contests you could run, and a ton of other resources. Can you tell us a little bit about what's there and what the effects these resources can have on a business?
Yeah, I'm a big believer that if you want to change a culture and create a culture of competition and fun and eliminate the culture of complacency, I think bringing games, contests, spiffs, bonuses into the sales team, into the sales department is critical. And man, I wanted to add a bunch of ideas. Look, some of them may work for your industry, some of them may not. Maybe you like some, maybe you don't. I don't care. You don't have to like them all, but I figure the more of them I put out there, you're going to pick something up that will work in your store, whether it's the heavy hitter set where guys get the autographed bats for hitting certain numbers on their profits, or whether it's the volleyballs for skill development and training, or whether it's just some obscure spiff program like Big Bucks for Little Trucks. It's about having fun and rewarding our people. You know, I hear a lot of managers say, you know, you shouldn't have to spiff or bonus your people for doing their job. And I guess they're right, but I always ask them, I say, you're right, but would you rather win or would you rather be right? And when you think about it, if I bonus them for going above and beyond, will that motivate people? Yeah. And it's not the only thing that motivates people. It's not just cash. It might be time off. It might be a title. I don't know what it is. You need to know what it is with your people. But anytime we can bring the game, spiffs, contests into our sales department, that's when competition's there and that's when the fun happens.
Well, Tim, writing a book, especially one like this one, which is such a great read and is going to help so many business professionals, is no small feat. So I want to say congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, if readers could take away only one thing from the book, what would you want it to be?
Realizing that, you know, the old saying, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. It's absolutely true. And don't wait till you're motivated to become a better manager and to start doing your one-on-ones and start training. Just do it, and then you'll be motivated. It's more of the ready, fire, aim method than it is ready, aim, fire, because perfection can be the enemy of progress. And if you wait for the perfect time, the time that you're motivated to do it, then there is no perfect time. And you'll never be motivated to do it. Just do it, and then you'll get motivated, because motivation's the byproduct of doing the things it takes to become motivated. And when you get motivated and you start taking action and you become that better leader and spending time with your people, that's when they get better. And that's when you become a true leader.
Tim, this has been a pleasure, and we just scratched the surface here today. There is so much more in the book, and I'm really excited for people to check it out. Everyone, the book is called Fearless, and you can find it on Amazon. Tim, besides checking out the book, where can people connect with you?
You can go to kentsgroup.com, and we have a lot of resources on there. We'll have some downloads on there. There's a shop on there with a lot of other resources for training, games, and competitions. And then also on social, on LinkedIn, I'm on there at Tim Kents and Kents Group. We have Instagram, the Tim Kents, Facebook, the Tim Kents. So we're all over the place. Follow us, and we'd love to hear from you guys.
Great. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the show today, and best of luck with your new book.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Author Hour. You can get Tim Kents' new book, Fearless, on Amazon. Also, you can find a transcript of this episode and all our other episodes on our website at authorhour.co. For more Author Hour, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite subscription service. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Same place, different author.